Good morning. Welcome to Secret to My Success. My name is Alan Bornstein, and I'm here with...
Luis Alicea. Good morning, everyone. Happy to be here once again in this beautiful, beautiful morning.
So we are here to talk to business owners about their journey, their venture, how they went from being employed by somebody to being self-employed. Luis brought some amazing guests in here that have played professional sports, football, baseball, basketball, and golf. We've had some wonderful people, and this is about learning their secret to their success to help you grow your business. Thanks for being here with us this morning. We're so glad you could be here. If you have an interesting story, if you know somebody that you think we should be talking to, we'd like to hear from you. You can reach me, Alan, 561-953-2007 at extension 101. Once again, my name is Alan. Secret to My Success, 561-953-2007, extension 101.
Please call us. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you. Good day. This is Alan, Secret to My Success, here with Mr. Luis Alicea.
Hey, what's the clapping, baby?
How's it going?
Good, man. Happy to be here again.
Really?
Yes.
It's like two in a row.
Two in a row?
Yeah.
That sounds like
you're on a streak.
That sounds like baseball.
Right?
Yeah.
We could call you the Cal Ripken of Secret to My Success.
Absolutely not.
What do you think? Dawn.
Nah, she's out of commission now.
Now, what are you doing?
I'm just playing with my, you know.
Don't even go there.
Over here.
Right?
Don't be talking about playing.
Louis got a special guest coming in a couple of weeks.
Oh, boy.
Right?
And he's from St. Louis.
St. Louis.
He is from St. Louis?
Yes.
No way.
We're not going to talk about that today, though.
We're not.
I do not want to embarrass Catherine. Catherine Murphy, thanks for being with us.
Good morning to be here on this special day with all of you. So thanks for the invite.
I think she needs a round of applause. You guys ready?
Yay!
Catherine, thanks for being with us.
I'm really glad to be here.
We are glad you're here. So let's talk. Where are you from?
So I grew up in West Palm Beach, Florida, but I was born in St. Louis, Missouri. We moved here to the area when I was seven.
Cardinal fan.
Yay.
And I don't know if she said she's a Cardinal
fan. She's a Cardinal.
Absolutely, of course.
You are?
Everybody from the Midwest
right?
is a Cardinal.
Or and I'm sure her grandfather celebrated you when you played for the St. Louis.
You know, I'm going to tell you I'm gonna tell you something that happened to me yesterday.
Let's hear it.
I was at my girls' softball game, and one of the teammates on the team, the dad comes to me. He goes, hey, you gave a ball to my dad when I was just a little boy when you were playing for the Red Sox. That was pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. But made me feel pretty old, too. So.
Yeah, somebody's grandfather just told me, I have an autographed signed ball from Luis Alicea. I'm like, we can get you another one if you want it.
For free.
Gotta
go
like
ahead,
it.
Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So you moved here, 7 years old. Where'd you go to high school?
Palm Beach Gardens High School, and then I went to Palm Beach State College in Lake Worth.
Nice.
Okay.
So pretty local. And then for my bachelor's degree, I moved away to Washington State, and I went to the Evergreen State College. So about as far away as you can get, but it was located on 1,000 acres of evergreen forest.
Beautiful.
I love nature, so it was a great fit for me.
Awesome.
And then after a few years on the West Coast, I moved back here to Florida, and I've been working a nonprofit since.
So why did you move back?
I missed my family. My family's here. You know, it gets very cloudy. One year I went 95 days with very little sunshine, and that starts to wear on you after a bit. So
depressing.
It was time to move back. And, you know, as an adult, I've just found so much here in Palm Beach County that I love, and I can't imagine moving away now.
My daughter just moved to Washington, and it seems that no matter where you are, the grass is greener somewhere else.
It is very green there.
Right.
it's just, you know, it's some of those days are boring. I mean, and being up there, it's just always wet and there's not a lot of sun. People are different up there, too.
I've been there a few times, and it's sunny, and everybody said that they just tell people that it rains all the time so nobody will come move
the
up
summers
there.
Are sunny.
Right.
Yeah. But the winters
but
are
the
long.
The summers are not very long.
Right. Okay. So you moved back here how long ago?
In about 2010.
Okay. And you got into not-for-profits. And most people don't just say, I'm going to get into not-for-profits. So let's hear your story. How'd you get
in? Sure. So I've always been interested in being helpful to society. And in college, I was a part of a couple of student groups. We focused on women's health. I worked a lot in HIV prevention, volunteered with the syringe exchange program, and just felt it was really important to work on community health education. And so when I moved back to Florida, I worked with a teen pregnancy prevention program with Gulfstream Goodwill. I worked at Compass, the LGBT community center, and then I landed a role at NAMI as director of programs. And recently have moved into the role of CEO at NAMI Palm Beach County.
That's amazing.
That's nice.
I've got to tell you what most people don't understand, and I have a 501c3 background. I used to be director of public relations for an adoption agency in a former life. And most people think that not-for-profits don't have to make money. And if not-for-profits don't make money,
how do they operate?
Nothing happens. Nobody gets paid.
Can't help people.
Right. Yeah. So the technical difference between a for-profit and not-for-profit, most people don't understand, is that a for-profit organization has a board or has stockholders. You own stock. A not-for-profit
has a board of directors.
Nobody owns it. So you could create your own not-for-profit, do everything you can, get it funded, put a board in place, and they say, hey, Catherine, so nice to have you, but we're going to replace you. You have zero job security. You report to a whole bunch of people. So let's talk about what you're doing and how did you get the role of CEO?
Sure, and that's a really interesting point. I went from having one boss, which was our, you know, then executive director, and now we have 14 board members, and I don't mind that system. It's all about the greater good and about serving the people the best way, and sometimes, you know, a director might get in the way of the greater good of an organization, and so the board is really there to add in that safety and the protection. We're very lucky at NAMI that we have an incredible board, a great board president, and they are just all in on the mission, and it helps to ensure the success of the agency and the quality services that the people receive. So the board just plays such an instrumental role, and having the right board members with the right experiences makes all the difference.
What is the mission of NAMI?
So we support people who are living with serious mental health conditions and their families, helping them to live their best lives possible. We believe in inclusion, people finding wellness, and having that mutual support in the community. All of our services are actually led by peers, so I'm not a clinician, and we're not employing any clinicians at this time. So it's people who are living with mental health conditions or family caregivers who lead our programs, many of which are volunteers. As I mentioned, we're a non-for-profit. All of our services are delivered free of cost, so nobody pays anything to receive services and guidance and support through NAMI. We have support groups, we have classes, we have presentations, and we have family navigation. And we just really try to educate the community about mental illness, try to destigmatize the conversations around mental illness, and help people to feel like they're a part of a natural community.
So in essence, let's say I have a relative for saying that I feel that he needs help.
So Lou, you're saying you have a friend.
Yeah, right.
We
right
all
here.
Have a friend or a relative. One
friend.
In
We're
five
connected.
People are living with a mental health condition. So if we ourselves don't have a condition, somebody we care about does.
Yeah. Yep.
So how do we, I mean, do we just contact you and then get, you know, and then you guys come see the case? How does that work?
Sure. So we have a great website, namipbc.org. They can call us at our local number and we can talk about what the situation is. If somebody's looking for guidance on getting into care, we can have those conversations. What we do is not necessarily refer out, but to find out what the situation is, what types of services might fit best, and to educate the family on how to access those best resources. And so that might be helping them to figure out what types of therapies they're interested in, what types of providers they're interested in, what has or has not worked in the past, what types of skills that the individual or the family has, and what might be helpful for them. So we really dig into that a little bit and do education with them.
Do you get referrals from a bunch of other groups, or are you primarily people come directly to you?
Both. So we do get a lot of Google searches for, you know, mental health in Palm Beach County. We get a lot of referrals through 211, who is basically the place where everybody calls when they need support in the area. They also answer the suicide prevention lifeline. And then other community partners. We try to really network with our community partners so that they know how to reach out to us.
What's your primary source of funding?
So we do a lot of that in-house. We have around 40% of our funding is through our events. We have a walk. We hope that you all can come out in November at John Prince Park in Lake Worth. We have a luncheon in December, so we do a lot of fundraising at those events. We have private donors. We also have foundations, and we write grants. So a really nice diversity of funding, which helps us to stay stable.
Do you personally write grants?
I write grants, right. Yes.
Yeah.
So I love it.
If somebody calls in and they need help, like, what's your process? How do you evaluate? How do you then provide them to the right resources that are going to be most beneficial?
We have a family resource specialist, and people can call the office Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, to connect to her, and then she'll hear what it is that they're looking for. Some of those services might be in-house, like our support groups, our classes, our presentations, mentoring, one-on-one mentoring, mm-hmm. and some of those might be other clinical services. And so, again, we provide that education and figure out what it is that they're looking for, and then try to provide them a few options of services that might be available for them.
I had a situation this year. One of my old teammates from college has been battling mental problems, and this year he finally took his life away. It was sad because we tried to call him, help him, and I don't know. He couldn't really. Mm-hmm. A young guy, 40 some years old. I think 53 years old, and the mind is an amazing, is a wonderful thing, but sometimes,
mm-hmm. It's crazy. You read what's happening in the news today. We had how many people killed up in Michigan at University of Michigan, and it seems that there's all kinds of issues, and people are hearing about it usually after the fact. What are the telltale signs for somebody who's got a friend? If Louis had a little more knowledge, a little more information, or maybe he was a little bit closer, he might have been able to do more.
Well, there are some warning signs of mental health conditions, warning signs of suicide, some types of contributing factors, things that might impact somebody's life. A lot of people who die by suicide, they have untreated mental illness. They're not getting support and care that might benefit them. And so being familiar with, let's say, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, people can call 988 from anywhere in the country to be connected to somebody who can talk to them 24 hours a day. That's a great place to start. And if somebody is in imminent danger, they can contact a mobile response unit. So they can send out professionals to the home environment or to the community and try to talk to someone and see how things are going. And if it escalates to needing to call 911, they can request a CIT-trained officer. This is Crisis Intervention Team, officers who are specifically trained in order to respond to mental health crises. And of course, there is support for the family or the caregiver. Sometimes it can be a lot as a supportive person to go through that. So there are groups and therapy and counseling for the individual supporting somebody to help to provide them the tools. You can't go it alone. Hopefully we can mm-hmm. connect people to treatment for themselves.
It's hard sometimes. About a year and a half ago, a guy here in West Palm Beach that we knew calls me in the morning. He's telling me that he's going to hang himself. Mm. And he's in his neighborhood. In his neighborhood, there's like a little park. And I started talking to him, and he was talking fine. And he started talking about his family, his kids, his wife, blah, 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 like nothing positive, right? So I dialed out a friend that knows him more, that is more connected to him, and he actually drove over there. When he started talking, he started like going like, blah, 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 like the same things that I'm like, this guy is really like off. So obviously a police officer came, and we called the police, and they took him. He hadn't bathed in I don't even know how many days. Right now, yeah, they put him. They went to a hospital with him and all that and all the stuff. But it's crazy. It's just like sometimes you're trying to comprehend what happened, what triggered.
What's going through their mind?
Because really, it takes a lot to jump in front of a train or jump from a building or pull a trigger.
That's the mental illness, and there's that. They're in pain. They're in so much
pain. Yeah, that's exactly.
And it's from my understanding, and I've lost quite a few people to suicide, and that daily pain that they live with, by doing that, they feel like that's just they want the pain to stop, and it's not always, I feel like, what they really want to do, right, is die, but the pain is so hard to live with every day they just got to go away.
There are some great community trainings. One is called Mental Health First Aid. It's open to community members. It's an incredible place to go and learn from some professionals about how to respond to somebody who might be in emotional distress. There's also Question, Persuade, Refer. So some great trainings out there available to the listeners for supporting somebody.
Do you see a trend of people with mental issues? Like, does it happen because they had a really rough upbringing, or that they went through some kind of trauma in their life that they can't? Is there any?
There's something called adverse childhood experiences, ACEs, and they find that the more categories of traumatic experiences we have before the age of 18, the more various health outcomes, including mental health outcomes, that people can have. Maybe it's incarceration, but maybe it is COPD or obesity. So there's all sorts of different ways that the trauma of our childhood can feed into our health outcomes as adults.
Mental health intersects quite a bit with substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems like they kind of go hand in hand. How do you work with substance abuse places, counselors, to try and kind of, it seems like it's a maze. I'm trying to figure out where you need to go in order to help somebody.
It really is a maze, and that goes back to the education of the family members and trying to help them to pick the right place to go to, being aware of what resources are available in the community. If you're calling to look for a substance use support, often, you know, it's how are you going to pay? Not, is this the right fit for you?
Right.
And so we try to talk to the family or the individual about finding that right fit for them, that right level of care.
And a lot of them, well, the substance abuse places, they focus on the substance abuse, which is great, but the underlying problem is that mental illness. And you know, I feel like personally that mental illness is, if that's handled and properly, cared for, and they do the things needed, then that substance abuse kind of, you know, it's secondary, right? Does that make sense? You know what I mean?
So many people who have substance use have mental health conditions and untreated mental health conditions.
It's
and sometimes it's easier to find access to substances than it is to mental health care.
Yeah, the street drugs are easier to get than to get to a doctor and get someone who really cares. And, I mean, I know that even with the doctors, medications and stuff, and I believe they do help, but if you're on the wrong medication, like I lost a friend to that, she hung herself, and I believe that she suffered for a long time. And I believe that the medication, they kept switching it around on her, is one of the things that, made it worse.
And sometimes it takes a long time to find the right medicine, or maybe that changes over time.
Yeah.
And for many people, it's a combination of therapy and medication and, different tools in their, coping toolkit.
There's been a lot of talk about police departments that don't have the proper training to deal with mental health issues, that policing is a little bit more black and white than that gray area of mental health. Do you have programs that you guys put in place that actually help local police officers or
there's a training called CIT, Crisis Intervention Training. We have NAMI presenters go out and speak to the officers about their experience of what it's like on that end of being the person or the family member who 911 is called for. And so that provides some sensitivity for them. It's a 40-hour training, and a lot of local officers go through that training. And so if you do have to call 911, it's advantageous to make that special request for a CIT-trained officer.
I really like what you just saw on TV, training, beat him up.
Right, yeah, it's just sad. So if you talk to police officers, it's interesting that they'll tell you they're more afraid of somebody that's suicidal on a call than a guy who's got a gun with hostages, because a suicidal person could almost do anything. It really bothers them that those are the most dangerous cases. So do you have to be in a big police department to have a CIT or little ones? I mean, it seems like there has to be more training.
Well, it is a big ask to take 40 hours out of your work week to go to a training. I don't know how all of the precincts are falling with how many officers have been trained through the program, but I think it's really a valuable resource and that it should be offered to all of the precincts.
I think it's something that they're doing and they're looking at in more areas. I mean, I don't know where, but I saw something. I don't know. I think in the middle of last year where it's really being looked at, right, where they're training people and even having bring somebody else in with the police officers that can go, right, not necessarily an officer, but someone who's trained to deal with mental health. So if there's a call, they call that extra person that comes, so they have, like, both.
What's the percentage, or if there is a situation where a person is mentally ill and that person through treatment has recovered from it? Is it once you're gone, once your mind is gone, is it hard to bring it back? Or
at NAMI, we believe that all people can recover, and that might be to varying degrees. Maybe it won't be exactly the same as before. We know a lot of students, they go away to college, and in those early college years, they have a psychotic episode, and they might not get exactly to where they were before, but many people, they can and they do recover, and that's why we believe it's important to have long-term supports. Your therapist, your case manager, even your psychiatrist, people may come and go out of your life, and that's why it's important that we look at the whole person, their whole system of support, and maybe mm-hmm. that's NAMI support groups or some of our social programs. Maybe that is a church or other different things that are supportive in that person's life. And so it, for many mental health conditions, it's a lifetime condition. For some people, you know, they have episodes, but, you know, we want to be there for the lifespan. And that's why we find it so important to work with the family, because, you know, hopefully if they have the right tools and resources, they can be there for the lifespan.
Have you ever had to push somebody aside and said, look, we don't have the resources to do what you possibly need? Have you ever had a...
Well, we don't provide clinical resources, and okay. so there are many people who need something that's beyond what we do. We're right. one component of... Yeah. You know, one piece of the picture. We provide that peer support and that understanding to know, you know, what it's like to be in your shoes. But we definitely, people need to see psychiatrists and counselors and skilled professionals.
Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the programs that you have and how you're helping people and share a little more?
Absolutely. So we have weekly support groups. We have groups led by and for people with mental health conditions on Zoom and in person. We have one specifically for young adults in that 18 to 35-year-old range. Their experiences are going to be so different than some of our senior citizens who come to our group, so they like to have their own space to connect. We also have a weekly family support group for those individuals who love and care for somebody with a mental health condition. It can be really draining to be a caregiver, and there can be a lot of fears and considerations that are very specific to them, so we add that support. We also have classes, so if somebody wants to learn the nuts and bolts of mental health and how to support their loved one or how to build those internal skills for themselves. We also have presentations, whether that's on financial planning, community resources, new treatment options. We try to educate the community, including local professionals, so they know what's available, the families and the individuals with the conditions, so they know what kinds of resources that they have for them. We have one-on-one mentoring. So if you have somebody who is not yet ready to fully connect to services, or they have some things they want to accomplish in their life, but they're just having some trouble figuring out how to make that happen, we can have them meet with a peer mentor to talk about their goals, make plans, try to figure out how to get into that next step of wellness. We also have a peer council, which is led by a president and vice president of people who are living with mental health conditions, and they create great recreational opportunities. So if any listeners out there have a fun place for our peer council to go and visit, we are always looking for new activities. They do at least one field trip a month, and they visit art museums, nature preserves, they go bowling, play mini golf, they have a monthly pizza party, and they just bond and connect. And it's a really great experience for them to build leadership skills within the council and to build friendships and to enjoy all the great things that Palm Beach County has to offer.
Have you noticed age-wise, what's kind of like a ballpark, if there is an age where you say more prone to have mental issues?
50% of people show signs by age 14 and 75% by age 24. So we really can start to see these conditions showing up in our children, middle school and high school. And it's just really being attuned, and for parents and the people around the kids to be aware of the warning signs and to feel okay with connecting their kids to treatment.
That was going to be my next question. If you're a parent that you've seen a child experiencing something like that, don't be afraid. Come out and try and get help as much as we can.
I do presentations in the middle schools and high schools, and I don't see the students having stigma against mental health, but at least every single presentation, one or more students ask about helping their parents to understand that mental illness is real and that they could benefit from support. Doris,
I have my aunt. My daughter suffers. She has, she's been diagnosed with different things. But anyway, my aunt is not she doesn't believe in it, you know, for whatever reason. And they just had their little issue the other day. And my daughter said, you don't believe in mental illness, so why would I come talk to you? You know? And it's hard. You don't. If you can't see
it. But your daughter knows you have it.
Well, I mean, it's. Well, it was my daughter talking to my aunt, you know? I mean, I'm not. So.
I met your daughter and your aunt. They both seem really nice.
No, they are very nice. But some people just, they struggle with it for whatever reason. It could be their own, afraid to, of the fear of dealing with it or whatever. I'm not saying anything bad about my aunt. She just, when you don't understand something, you just don't understand it. It's hard, right? People don't get it. If you can't, it's not broken. You don't see, the arm's broken. Then how is it, how does it really exist, right?
Absolutely, and that's what our kids are facing because we're telling them, reach out, get support, connect, and now we have to work on the aunts and the parents and other adults to help them to understand that with early support that the kids can have better coping skills.
Catherine, I got to ask you a question. It comes down to this. Louis played baseball, and every year everybody gets together, go to spring training. They do everything they can, and their goal is to pinnacle the World Series, right? That's it. We just had a Super Bowl. So I want you to tell me the pinnacle in which you want to achieve as the CEO for NAMI and how we can help.
Well, I want for this year to be the best year yet. This is our 40th anniversary. I'm so excited to be leading the organization. I'm brand new, just started in January. January is the 40th anniversary, so it's really optimal timing for growing and expanding. And so for me, the pinnacle will be, of course, making the most money this year at our fundraisers and serving the most people we've served yet and in the best way possible. So really hearing that feedback from the people that we serve, that yes, they're getting incredible quality services that are impacting their lives.
What fundraisers do you do?
We have a luncheon and we have a walk. So I hope everybody can come out and join us at John Prince Park in Lake Worth. That's going
to
be on
I'm
sorry, what date?
November 4th.
Okay.
And that's an incredible opportunity, not just for fundraising, but to show the community support. People come out wearing T-shirts that they make themselves, or they might come out and have a team dedicated to somebody that they're supporting. And for our families and individuals who experience mental health conditions, it's very heartening to see hundreds of people coming out and saying, we support this cause. Mental health is important to us. So just that visible support.
Catherine, how does somebody reach you to either, one, donate money or offer some sort of services to help, or two, to volunteer?
Our website is namipbc.org. We are the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Palm Beach County. So you can find out all of the information about our programs. We have a big donate button there, and we would love to hear from some of your listeners if they're interested in receiving services, volunteering with us, or donating.
We can't thank you enough for coming here.
Yeah, and thank you for what you do. It's super important, right? It's helping so many families,
saving lives,
and it's,
it's awesome.
Congratulations on your new role. And whether you want to start your own not-for-profit or run a not-for-profit, it's about passion and how you can help people, because if you make it just about money, you're in the wrong business.
Right.
Well, I appreciate you all for having me on today and for highlighting mental health. And May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and there's a special day where we actually ask everybody in Palm Beach County to wear green. It's on May 18th. We call it Get Your Green On. Nice. And so that's going to be another way that we can all support and show that we are changing as a county. And I really appreciate you for bringing awareness to the topic, and thanks for having me on.
And maybe May you can come back, right? And
talk
a little bit more. Yeah.
Especially closer to the events. Closer to the events that you're talking
about. That'd be great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
When it comes to health coverage, you want solid value from a trustworthy company you can rely on. Florida Blue offers Medicare Advantage plans that can help you get more out of your health coverage. And don't you want more? Call Apple Insurance, your local agency for Florida Blue at 888-MY-BLUE-8 to have all your Medicare questions answered and learn about different options. Don't settle for less than the value and stability Florida Blue has delivered throughout the state of Florida to Medicare beneficiaries for more than 25 years. Value, security, knowledge, and trust. Blue Medicare from Florida Blue means more. Call Apple Insurance at 888-MY-BLUE-8 today to speak to a licensed agent about your Medicare Advantage options. That's 888-MY-BLUE-8. Apple Insurance and Florida Blue. Call 888-MY-BLUE-8 today.
Florida Blue is an independent license of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Good day. This is Alan, Secret to My Success, here with Mr. Luis Alcea. No, I didn't go to loser.
Thanks for the pass. Yeah, you had a good one for yesterday, but
yeah. I don't want to hear it.
You don't want to hear it? All right.
When are we gonna go golfing?
Actually, I go every once in a while and kind of like hit some balls and kind of get the kinks out. But we should go, man.
We're supposed to be in a golf tournament on March 3rd, I think. Yes. That's like next week.
Perfect. Nice.
I spent all this money. I think we have to go.
We better go.
You want to go?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in. Come in.
I'm going to hit to the left. You're going to hit to the right. Maybe
no, I hit
else
in the middle.
Oh, you're going to hit the middle?
I'm in the middle.
I don't believe you're that good.
Yes, I can.
I've seen you golf.
I got my good days and my bad days.
I know. And
that's really why I keep coming back.
But it's bad when your daughter outdrives you.
No, my son does.
Okay. Gotta like it. Dawn! Wake up!
Ellen!
Dawn, really? I saw that. Did I catch you?
I was drinking my coffee.
Middle swallow?
Drinking my coffee.
How are you doing?
I am super fantastic.
You are?
Yeah, I am.
That's it?
That's it.
Just super fantastic?
I can add to it.
Let's hear something. What do you got?
Well, you got your crystals in your chest. You got your heart.
Wait a minute. Are you looking at her chest?
I was just looking at the crystals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my amethyst, and this is my aunt. Her
ashes. Does that give you power? Does that give you like...
gives me lots of power. It gives me superpower.
Yeah,
really?
I like that. I like
that. Wow.
Yeah. Hey, baseball is back, bro.
I know it.
Yankees.
Oh, I don't even go there.
Speaking of that, yeah, there's a spring training coming up, what, like March 22nd?
Mm-hmm.
Can you get us tickets? My dad's already calling.
Tickets for who?
The Yankees.
Oh, no.
He knows people.
He doesn't even have people. No, he doesn't have enough pull. I'm sorry. My buddy Louie played for the Red Sox.
I don't believe
he worked for the Red Sox.
I believe he has pull.
And guess who gets me the tickets?
Yeah, exactly.
Mr. Bornstein.
Okay, so don't even...
I say, Alan, can you help me?
All right, Alan. Then somebody.
Yeah, we'll have to call somebody.
Thank you.
Hey, we have a guest today. We forgot about that.
No, we have a guest. Steve, welcome.
Thank you.
How are you?
I think I'm okay so far, but a little nervous.
Don't be nervous.
Why?
Because
of Alan?
No. Don't be nervous. This is going to be fun. Before we go back to you, Steve, Don, did you have something you wanted to tell us before we got to this?
No.
Oh, I thought you said there was something exciting you were going to share.
No. Yes, I was doing. She was going to.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm having a bunch of work done to my house, so that.
No, that wasn't it. That wasn't it.
No.
It was how you drove over here today in your convertible.
Oh, in my convertible. Oh,
topless.
No. Well, the top was down.
Okay.
I did have my top on. I had the music blasting. It was so much fun.
Nice.
I love driving that car.
Gotta like it.
Feel good. That wind blowing in your chest.
Yep.
Okay. This is PG. Anyway, so Steve, where are you from?
I am originally from New Orleans, Louisiana.
Ooh, so, Cajun guy.
Who dat?
Do you get mad when people call it New Orleans?
It's like nails New on
Orleans.
The chalkboard.
New Orleans.
Said that again?
It's kind of like nails on a chalkboard to me.
Really?
Yeah.
I learned my lesson. I was going up to the World War II Museum with my uncle, and they said, you want to fit in here. It is not New Orleans. It's New Orleans. Like, you almost forget the R. New Orleans.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting when you talk to people. They respected when you actually said the name of their city right.
It's very, very easing to our ears when we hear that. Yeah, we don't get very.
It's an exciting town.
It is. This past week was Mardi Gras.
So yeah, Mardi Gras. Was this Carnival, past Tuesday. Yeah, it's an exciting town.
It's,
Dawn, did you get any beads?
No.
Really? Never mind. Okay. So... You're born, raised in New Orleans.
Born and raised in New Orleans. I was then moved to Houston for 10 years after Katrina. Moved us over to Houston.
That ain't too far.
No. I was in. Spent 32 years in shipping, international shipping. So New Orleans riverfront, and then we ran a company called Wilhelmsen Ship Service in North America. So we had 24 offices throughout all of the East Coast, West Coast, Gulf Coast. So moving over to Houston was not much of a transition. Then we moved from Houston after 10 years, and I took a job up in Virginia, Norfolk, Virginia, to working with a ship agency and terminal operating company. So worked there for, had a contract for 3 years, and then we decided to head on down to Florida and see. Get old, you're supposed to move to Florida, right?
You got the calling?
Yep, you just got that urge. We had to go to Florida.
Right?
Yeah, so we came down here, and I...
How long was that?
Been four, almost, it'll be 5 years in May that I've been down here.
Nice.
So what'd you go to college for?
Went to college for accounting.
Really?
University of New Orleans.
Because you do not look like a bean counter.
No, and people always tell me that I don't have that mentality, but... That's my foundation. I never wanted to really do accounting. I wanted to run a business.
Right.
So, but if you know accounting, you can go into any business and see how the business operates.
It's funny you say that, but anybody who's telling me they're going to start a business and they're taking any college courses, I'm like, I don't care what you do, take an accounting 101, an accounting 102, you know.
Economics, all of those.
Right.
You got to get that background because that really gives you the foundation. You can walk in. If you can read a balance sheet, you can read an income statement. You can tell where a company makes its money or where it's losing its money.
You think they still teach T accounts?
I use them all the time.
Really?
Yes.
So when you have a debit, you have to have a credit. Now with all the software that you have, you don't ever have to do it. You just kind of have to pick what it is. But way back when, you had to know that, you know, putting money into your bank account is a debit, which meant you had to credit something in order to make the T account work.
Yeah. That's why they call it a balance sheet. Both sides have to balance the debits and the credits.
Right. Excellent. Okay, so you went to school for college, you got yourself into the shipping industry.
Correct.
And you're now here in Florida.
Now here in Florida.
What actually made you get to Florida?
My wife was retired already, and I'm hopefully on the verge of getting there, but we decided, where do we want to live? Don't have to pay state income taxes, so it was either go back to Texas, Florida, or Nevada, so we decided Florida.
Did you have a job before you came to Florida?
Did not.
Oh, so you just kind of moved down here and said, I'm going to wing it.
The contract was over in Virginia. A couple of our friends that were realtors up in Virginia said, oh, you got to go try out the Villages. We went there. So no.
In Orlando, that area?
Yeah, that area.
Yeah, it's north. It's in Ocala.
Ocala area.
So you've heard all kinds of stuff about that, Don, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
There's all kinds of sexually transmitted diseases. They find people in the bushes having sex.
We went up there for a... bike fest up in Leesburg in that area, which is you
it's
know
a little bit
in
south
area.
Of that.
So, and this was a few years ago. There was a billboard that had that, you know, the highest STD rate mm-hmm. was in the elderly.
Yeah,
I was like,
in
what?
The Villages, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They get to an age to say, who cares about condoms, really?
Well, that's... right. I guess at that age they just go from door to door.
Yeah,
that's so funny because when I was 15, I felt the same way. But I mean, I guess when you're 70 years old, that's the whole
you
thing,
revert
right?
back,
you
will
die
right?
somehow, right?
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So yeah, so you didn't take your friend's advice to go move to the Villages because you weren't ready to share your wife, right?
We took no.
Okay.
We just came down and looked at. They had these free, you go and stay and play golf things at PGA Village up in Port St. Lucie. And that's, we said, this is some place we could live. So I love golf. We love Florida. So that was it.
That works out well.
It does.
But you didn't retire. You're working. Tell
I'm
us what you're
working.
Doing.
Right now, I am the CEO for Palm Beach Maritime Academy, which is a charter school, a tuition-free public school, charter school. A lot of people think charter schools are private schools, but they're actually public schools. And we have two campuses. We have a K-5 and a 6-12.
You know, your K-5 used to be a furniture store.
City Furniture. And our 6-12 used to be the headquarters for the National Enquirer.
Mm. So, you know, they used to put up this huge Christmas tree. I think we have to figure out a way to get that going again, right?
Yeah, that would be great. We get a lot of little alien babies when we take down a wall and stuff, all those, and all those stories about people's affairs and everything.
Really? That's pretty funny.
So how do those charter schools work?
Charter schools are schools of choice. So you file a charter, and you're producing something that's different than what the traditional public schools offers. Like ours is maritime. So we do a lot of STEM classes, marine science, Our students go down, they go shark tagging with the University of Miami, they go down to Marine Lab, they just went down last week.
This is in Port St. Lucie?
This is actually in Lantana.
Palm Beach County.
This is 3 years we were voted the best public school in Palm Beach County by Palm Beach Post.
What's the name of it?
Palm Beach Maritime Academy. If you go down 95, right off mile 61, you can see the school from there.
So in Palm Beach, there's three different things. I know my kids went to school. You've got your regular schools. You've got choice schools. You've got charter schools. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you have private schools. So a lot of people say from the public school sector that the charter schools are mean and evil and all they're doing is taking our money to educate kids that should be in a public school. Let's hear the rebuttal.
Well, if they were doing their job right, there wouldn't be a need for charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
We provide an option, a safe option. We have 1,200 kids. We have very safe schools. We give them an opportunity to focus on a certain area of education. In ours, it's STEM. We are a Title I school, so all of our kids, we're over 100%. We're 100% Title I, which means all of our kids are socioeconomic disadvantaged. So they're on, they get the free and reduced lunch. So we're providing a service, an additional service, but those kids that are of that don't usually get the chance to do a choice. Mm-hmm. That the socioeconomic disadvantage. So they have an option now to get a choice. We open up our enrollment to any student. There's no requirements. Once we fill a class, then we have to have a waiting list and do a lottery and put the kids in. But there's no preferential treatments like some private schools or religious-based schools. So we follow all the same rules for the Florida DOE. We are tied into Palm Beach County, so we report our monthly financials, we report our monthly students, we do the same grades, the same curriculum, but we specialize, we have a certain area, we have the freedom to do certain other curriculums that we can add in that aren't core. So we do marine science, we do, we have robotics, we're starting a robotics with Lego, in conjunction with Lego, doing a robotics lab at our lower campus. We just started an e-gaming club at our upper campus where the kids not just compete against others, but they learn how to do the coding, learn how video games work, and what's the potential for opportunities for them to
big time
move into that. Mm-hmm. And they love it.
That's the way everything is going.
Yeah.
Technology.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the CEO of two charter schools, or it's one school but two locations, or
right? Okay. So it's two separate school numbers, but yeah.
Okay. What's the
biggest?
It's
a nonprofit.
And that's funny. A lot of people think nonprofit means you're not allowed to make money, but if you don't make money, you don't have a business.
I mean, we actually have to make money in order to meet the criteria to be an ongoing entity.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest challenges you've been facing? Let's talk about COVID too. How did it affect you?
COVID was unbelievable. First off, within the first couple of months, our principal at our upper campus passed away from COVID in April of the first couple of months. So that put us behind the eight ball. And then right after that, we closed the schools down for the balance of that school year. The students, they're 2 years behind now. I mean, we have third graders that we're teaching the ABCs to that haven't been. So I mean, it's a big catch up. And, you know, it's not just us, but it's across our new grades are coming in, and the kids are struggling, but you know, they're learning, they're gaining. Finding teachers, the teacher shortage around the nation. I mean, finding certified teachers to teach the classes, everybody's having problems finding people in service industries and everything else, but teachers, it's crazy.
It's everywhere.
It's horrible. And they're trying to incentivize the teachers. I know there's a new proposal for more teacher pay raises.
Are you bound to the pay schedule that Palm Beach County pays its teachers?
We are not. You know, theirs is a union base. We are non-union. So we can move around that, but that's based on the funding that we get.
Funding
so we get the
get,
same
right.
funding that right. the all schools get. So we're tied to that funding. There's a tax referendum that just got passed that helps supplement teacher pay and our security, and also supplements our fine arts and mental health and guidance counselors. So we had to fight to get included in that because the district tried to eliminate charter schools from that. Going back to your point about how they think we're just taking their money, we're a public school. We can't go to the voters and say, please, can we have a referendum? They can.
Right.
We've got some of our kids that parents have kids in our school and have kids in a public school. And they were part of our lawsuit and say, well, why does this kid that's going to a traditional public school get funding and my kid that's going to the charter public school doesn't get the funding? So we fought that all the way up to state Supreme Court, and we won that battle. So,
wow. Yeah. I grew up in Connecticut, and they used to do busing. They would take a lot of kids out of the inner city, and they'd move them to outside towns and programs that they put together. In fact, there was a Chef versus O'Neill, which was this kid that sued the governor saying he couldn't get an education because he lived in Hartford, and that they had to move these kids into the suburbs. So my kids, they grew up down here, and we put them in a charter school, not a charter school, we put them in a magnet program, which to me I thought was more like a reverse busing. Instead of busing those kids out, parents would bring the kids into a really bad neighborhood, and that's what they did. So I saw firsthand that the differences between some of the local kids and some of the kids that were going there that wanted to be there. And I was joking around at one point. I said I was going to run for Board of Ed, but nobody would actually elect me because my philosophy is that schools are not there to teach your children. They're there to educate your children. Okay, so if you don't handle the teaching, the discipline, the manners, all the things that happen, when a teacher's in a classroom and they have to do all that, it kind of starves the rest of the children from being educated.
That's only been exacerbated by COVID. Because the kids were at home for 2 years, and all they did was social media, and all they did was go on the computers. And they've lacked that social interaction. Mm-hmm. And the parents, initially the parents all said, we understand what y'all were saying, exactly what you're saying. We understand how bad our kids are. We appreciate everything you do. And as soon as they came back full time, it reversed right back to, what are you doing with my kids? Why aren't you parenting my kids for me? They call us up and say, well, my kid's getting bullied at home. We can't do anything about that. We have them on campus. We can take care of our campus and we keep them safe there. But you have to take some responsibility for your kids. And if you give us well-behaved kids, we're going to give you well-educated, well-rounded, you know, young men and women. But, right. You know, if we have to spend all of our time focusing on discipline, it makes the education hard. And
it goes for anything, even any type of kid that I see right now. I mean, some of the ones that come in and, you know, even in sports, the ones that take good, you know, criticism, or they take good, you know, good teaching. The ones that don't is because at home it's just not there.
Yeah.
You know, there's no direction, there's no structure or anything. So it's hard.
Yeah. Sports and team, you know, are after school clubs and teams or beta club, that kind of structure and discipline, I mean, it's great. I mean, I grew up playing basketball throughout, you know, grammar school into college, and it just gives you that foundation that other people are relying on you. So you have to be there and be part of the team. You have to function. Mm-hmm. You can't be your own little individual island.
Yeah,
there.
And you know, it's funny you say that. I did an exercise with this team, and I gave them a piece of paper and I said, I want you, each one of you, to write, why are you playing the sport?
Mommy made me.
and you know what? I can get one that said, you know, we're here, be the best I can, and I'm gonna win. You know, everything was, I want to hit 300, I want to hit 500, I want to be, it was all individual stuff. It was really, and that was my goal, trying to get them to understand that everybody in sports got to do their part. And at the end of the day, we have a great team.
Well, talking about teams, so my daughter went to a public school first year. She's in kindergarten. They're telling us that they're doing, like, block teaching, and they're going to have them different levels. And they're going to have different levels for reading. And I'm saying to the teacher, could you tell me what level my daughter's in? She's, why does it matter? I'm like,
why is it?
Because if she's at the bottom, I want to be able to help you. If she's at the top, I don't want to drive her crazy. So I don't think that this is just you. It's a team sport. I'm involved as a parent. I mean, I'm not looking for bragging rights as to where my daughter is.
You
got to
communicate. You got to have incredible communication. I mean,
but this teacher looked at me like I was crazy for asking.
They don't.
Yeah, well, that's the, you know, everybody gets a trophy type of mentality that you can't isolate certain kids. But that's the only way you can
teach them.
Teach them. And, and you don't want...
You have to do hard things. They have to learn to work through those hard things and the challenging stuff.
You saddle a teacher with, you know, we basically, the kids are in a 1 through 5 level. So the one being, you know... Below, 2 levels below. 3 is you're at your grade level. So it's 1 is 2 levels below, 5 is 2 levels above. But if you've got a class with 5s and 1s in it, nobody gets the right attention. So you have to know where your kid is so that you challenge them. You got to bring the 1s up, but you also got to keep the 5s as 5s.
But you got to help.
You don't want everybody as 3s.
You know, the person who yells at a kid to get an A but doesn't give them the tools to get an A.
Right.
I mean, because you see this all the time. Kids are crying, they're not getting their grades. Well, at some point, parents have to step up and be part of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that me coming from industry and then moving into education, where I was able to bring a business look at how the schools were running. So we were able to give the teachers more tools in their toolbox to do exactly what you're saying. So how we raise the money, how we manipulate the money so that we can fund these special programs to get the right teachers, to get the extra time for in the STEM teachers and the supplemental education teachers, that we're able to put the focus on the kids that need it, but also keep the upper kids going.
So in your opinion, what is lacking and what needs to improve?
Lacking, obviously, you know, it's money for teachers. Yeah, and there's a lot of proposals for that. We just started this year. There's a actual assessment where you're doing progress monitoring, where we, in the past, we've only ever graded, you know, everything was based on a test grade. So we were teaching kids to take a test instead of teaching kids to educate them. So now the governor and Department of Education put in what they call progress monitoring. So each individual kid is an individual grade, and you're watching them. And so you take one test at the beginning of the year, and you take one at the end of the year. So it's not an overall grade for that class. It's an overall grade on how this kid progresses, the child progresses through the year. And that's where we're thinking, and that's going to be great, because we're not teaching. Everybody was teaching to take a test.
The FCAT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you don't, I mean, you don't learn that way. You learn how to take a test. And you might be great at taking the test, but then at the end of the day,
And those tests to grade the school and how they're advancing their kids. And, you know, if you do your job accordingly throughout the year, you don't have to worry about that.
But FCAT was actually determining funding for the school as well. Yeah. Exactly. So it became a problem.
And their grades, right? They're an A school, a B school. Martin County, I know that they'll, kids who aren't up to par, right? They ship them out. There's some of those other schools.
They put them into special schools that aren't graded.
So speaking of that, can you, as a charter school, say, hey, Louie, kid's not making it. Got to bring him somewhere else. We just can't do it.
Well, there are certain kids that, because of our size, we don't have the breadth of offer that 3,000-student high school has. We have 250 high school students. So there are certain kids that want to come to our school, and we don't have
the resource
to do that, where they would have to go there. But every kid that comes in, you know, if they can fit into our curriculum, we bring them in and we don't let them go.
Well, I'm saying if there was a kid that needed to be expelled from your program for whatever reason, are you allowed as a charter school to say you need to go back somewhere else?
We are allowed to dismiss them from our school. We can't expel them out of the school system.
Okay.
You know, we can send a recommendation to the district to expel them, but only the school district can expel the kids. But we don't have to take them. If they don't meet, when they come into our school, they sign a code of conduct that they agree to live up to our code of conduct. And when they fall behind on that, they get every chance to correct themselves. But if they continue to do it, and just like the school district, we have certain zero tolerance on drugs and weapons and stuff like that.
I'm going to give you your 1-minute elevator pitch to parents out there that could be listening about your school. Why should they come and hang out with you?
Well, if you come to our campus and you look at the students, you'll know why, because you just see the happiness and the camaraderie that they have. And, you know, they run around the campus and they're happy to be there, which is very unusual for schools these days. We have a very dedicated staff that's majority have been over 10 years with the school. The school is the longest running charter school, general education charter school in Palm Beach County, over 22 years now. We are continually expanding our curriculum, and our focus on academics is above par, and we're going for our fourth consecutive year as the best public school in Palm Beach County.
What's your website? How does somebody call to set up an appointment to come in and do a
PalmBeachMaritimeAcademy.org.
Say that again?
PalmBeachMaritimeAcademy.org.
Maritime?
Maritime Academy.
Is your phone number?
Is 561-578-5700.
And that's for kids that kind of want to be in a scientific?
Science, technology. We do have sports programs. We do have... And the one thing with charter schools that if you want to play, we don't have tackle football, but if you wanted to play tackle football, you could go to your home school and still play, go to a charter school, but play football
at
your, yeah.
Steve, we can't thank you enough for being here.
It's been a pleasure.
Went by real fast.
It
some
did.
Great information.
Some crawfish etouffee.
Oh, yeah.
Is that where we're going next? We're going to take them up there?
Crawfish etouffee, baby.
I'm in. Dawn, anything else you want to say to wrap up?
Thank you for sharing. The schools and what happened through COVID, I think, is interesting, you know, and how it's affecting the kids and stuff. And it's good that there's some charter schools out there like you guys to give kids other opportunities. Right?
Studies have said it's going to take us 5 years to recover.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Round of applause for Steve. Thank you.
Yeah.
When it comes to health coverage, you want solid value from a trustworthy company you can rely on. Florida Blue offers Medicare Advantage plans that can help you get more out of your health coverage. And don't you want more? Call Apple Insurance, your local agency for Florida Blue, at 888-MY-BLUE-8 to have all your Medicare questions answered and learn about different options. Don't settle for less than the value and stability Florida Blue has delivered throughout the state of Florida to Medicare beneficiaries for more than 25 years. Value, security, knowledge, and trust. Blue Medicare from Florida Blue means more. Call Apple Insurance at 888-MY-BLUE-8 today to speak to a licensed agent about your Medicare Advantage options. That's 888-MY-BLUE-8. Apple Insurance and Florida Blue. Call 888-MY-BLUE-8 today.
Florida Blue is an independent license of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Thanks for listening to The Secret to My Success on Legends 100.3.